It's time again for the Scotty Johnny Podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottum. Talking Wisconsin sports, two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what he read on Twitter. With music by Duluth Greats, Cars and Trucks, here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, one and all. Welcome into the Scotty Johnny Podcast. I am your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Barnett, Scotty Johnny himself coming at you. And with me, as per usual, is Aaron Flottum.
Live and large from Janesville, Wisconsin. John, how's it going? It's been a couple of weeks, son.
It has, and now I'm using my my cough button here to try to save everybody from listening to that. How are you doing?
What's that? I'm doing great. I'm doing fine. A lot better than your voice, apparently. Holy smokes.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Sorry, getting a drink there while I'm going through this. And we'll leave all that in because this is great. This is great.
Dead air.
Yeah, definitely. Anyhow, of course, you can follow the show at ScottyJohnny1 on Twitter. You can follow me at JBarn54, the letter J, Barn, and the numbers 5 and 4. Aaron, where do they follow you?
They find me at Cheddar Talk, John, at Cheddar, like the cheese talk, like what comes out of your mouth, and it's become a saucy page as of recently. I've gotten followed and complimented by at least 6 Russian bots in the last week, so, you know, good takes, yeah. Good times.
Yeah, the Russian bots are definitely coming out in force. I've had probably, like, 12 new ones. Some of them go away. It's more fun when then suddenly they're like, hello, they send you a little message, and I was like, I did get a fun response. Somebody followed me. It's clearly a fake Prince Harry website or something like that, and the Twitter's followed me, and then it sends me this ridiculous message like, I bring you peace and joy, blessings upon you, and I wish to tell you, wonderful friend, that I would like to get to know you. And I was like, yeah, no, this is not a real person. This is fake. It's all good. Anyhow, you can also follow the show at ScottyJohnny.com. And, of course, you can get us on our Facebook page or anywhere else. And you can listen to us on Twitch or you can follow us on Stitcher or Spotify or it's the iTunes or the music, Apple Music, and all that. We're on any sort of place where you're looking to find podcasts, you can find us. Please go to those places, rate us, you know, give us the 5 stars, subscribe, follow, share us, get us to all your friends. But we need to get right into sports again today, so let's get moving in with our main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
Aaron, the thing that everybody is talking about for maybe the second time in my lifetime is basketball in the state of Wisconsin, and specifically pro basketball, because it has not been much of that since about 2001.
In the month of May. Usually we're done talking about that in December.
Normally we're done in October.
Yeah, well, there's
so
that.
Just to be clear, we had just the other night was the big setback. We were starting to feel like maybe this could be one that could get to a sweep, but it's not going to be, obviously, because it's 2-1. Right. But last night's game, basically what I learned, and I put this out on Twitter, is if the Bucks play terribly and everybody shoots poorly and Giannis fouls out, it's going to take Toronto 2 overtimes to beat them.
Yes.
That's where it is. Don't do all of those things, and the Bucks win in regulation.
Right, absolutely.
On the road, too. On the road. In front of Toronto.
And a Jazz stadium, too. I mean, that stadium was bumping last night. Just as loud as Fiserv. Obviously, you know, they've got just – they're cheering for a lot of the same things with a lot more – I mean, the Bucks have got 20 years of just lack of success frustration. Toronto's had the best record, one of the best records in the league for years and years in a row, and just could never get past the second round because they'd have to play LeBron. And so, you know, they're like, this is literally their – NBA Finals is just being in the Eastern Conference. So that place was bumping last night, too. Difficult place to play in.
The other thing is Toronto still has a whole lot of Toronto Maple Leafs pent-up kind of fandom and rage right now, too. For those who don't know, I mean, the Toronto Maple Leafs have not won a playoff series in quite a long time. I don't know the exact number of years. It's been a long time. And for me, it's especially important because I'm a Boston Bruins fan, and it has been the Boston Bruins in game seven 2 years in a row, knocking them out of the playoffs in the first round. And Toronto is a hockey town, but they have not had any playoff success for one of the most storied franchises in hockey. They have not had any success in about two decades now, at least. And having this team there, I think, for Toronto is something that, you know, it's the one thing they've got. It's their big sports thing since Joe Carter was playing. They haven't had a whole lot else going for them. I guess they got Vlad Jr. now, but you know, they haven't had a ton of big things to get excited for in sports-wise, and this is their championship kind of caliber team. They've got the stars out there. They got Drake showing up all the time, cursing that team. Not showing up for Game 7 last series, by the way. Didn't show up, and they got them, you know, they got the win then, but now here they are against the Bucks. They got a very lucky game, but here's the other thing I think they got to worry about is they're putting in crazy minutes. Like, you're looking at like what Kawhi Leonard is playing out there, and it's getting ridiculous. He played 52 minutes last night, I believe. There were two different players, him and I forget who else, and I'll look it up, but they had two players with 52 minutes. They had another one with 45. The highest minuted Buck had 45. They had three players with at least that.
It was Siakam and Leonard were both over 50 minutes, yeah, if I remember correctly, which is the same way the first couple of games. I mean, man, the Raptors were playing a high school bench in game one. They were playing eight players the whole game. It was ridiculous. Like, all their starters were in minutes over 40, which is what they're going to have to do to get past the Bucks. And if for some miracle reason they do get past the Bucks, they're going to get it's going to be like taking them out back against Golden State, because they're just going to get run over, because that team's going to be absolutely destroyed. Even though there's something, I don't think the finals can even start until May 30th, regardless of how the teams play.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I'm looking at it. It's Mark Gasol had 45 minutes and 16 points. Yeah, he had, I guess, as good as you're going to get from Mark Gasol at this point. Lowry had 32 minutes. Green had 34. 30 from Powell, 31 from Van Vliet. And then, yeah, the Bucks had only one player at 45, Antetokounmpo, who then fouled out, of course.
Right.
Middleton at 44, Lopez at 40. I mean, Mirotić only played 29 minutes, Bledsoe 34. Hill and Brogdon got in for 37 each. This is how I think that, I mean, I still have no concern at this point. The Bucks are just so much deeper than Toronto. Toronto's got a star who can match up, and if this were a one-on-one game, that would be incredibly interesting to watch Kawhi versus Giannis, but it's not. In part because the Bucks are just a better defensive team.
They're better defensively. They're deeper. The Bucks held two teams to low scores last night. They held Toronto to a low score. The only reason why I got, if it would have ended regulation, they would, both would have been in double digits. I think it was, 98 at the end of regulation. I don't know. I don't have the box score in front of me, and I don't like facts. I mean, they got to triple digits in overtime. And as a matter of fact, the Bucks' only lead was in overtime. The other team that they kept from scoring on low scoring last night was themselves. That's it. You hit it on the head earlier. It's like we've talked about time and time before. You talked about last week on the show, and I said when the postseason began, is that the only team that keeps them from scoring is themselves. And when they're clogging the lane, you know, and it's been brought up on Sports Talk Radio, it's been brought up on the game over in Milwaukee and the Big Ten 70 in Madison numerous times, that when they start clogging the lane, and it happened in the regular season, these are games they lost, like, to the Suns. Went out of nowhere, they just lost to the Suns. Started clogging the lane, and Giannis can't just score at will, and so he's dishing it out, and then they're not making the shots from the outside.
Yeah,
you know,
they were.
And he was getting – it was hack-a-shack on Giannis last night, and his free throws were terrible. I was 2-for-7, you know, and he only got to the line 4 or 5 times. You know, it was just not a good game for him, because they were obviously saying, we're going to take out Giannis. The rest of you have to make it work. Now, if Mirotić and Middleton and Bledsoe's – if they're hitting threes and Bledsoe's slashing – and Lopez is doing his thing, which is this pseudo hybrid center thing, because he's one of the best scoring centers of this generation. Just nobody knows it because he played for the Nets. You know, he's the all-time leading scorer for the Nets. you know, so he doesn't have to play proper center because of what Giannis does, you know, and he's been having a heck of a series, but it can't just be Lopez. You know, the other three starters and the guys coming in, I would argue to put in George Hill a lot earlier and get him more minutes because he was more effective in his time out there. Chris Middleton looked terrible last night at times, especially towards the end of the game when it was just him trying to lead the team. It was not good. But
Yeah, both Middleton and Bledsoe went 3 of 16, 1 of 6 from 3. And they combined for 20 points. You're not going to see that probably again. I mean, as much as you're like, I get what you're saying. Obviously, what they're trying to do is just keep Giannis from being able to kill you every single play. And that's exactly what the Celtics tried to do. And, I mean,
it worked for a game. And it almost worked for the first game of this series for Toronto. I mean, we're real close to the Bucks being down 2-1 right now. You know, because game one, I mean, the only game that was really in hand was game two. In Milwaukee.
We're one made basket away from this being 3-0, though, too.
Obviously, yes.
So, yeah. I mean, this is just one where it's like, I don't know that they have the sort of talent. I mean, Horford sitting down there as part of that wall that they're putting up to keep Giannis out, that was far more effective because I think Horford's a better player than what they've got down low. Mm-hmm. If they're going to be putting Gasol and Siakam back there or whatever, I don't think that's nearly as impenetrable. And, yeah, as a team, they shot, was it from 3-point? They shot 31.8, 14 of 44. But that's only because, Brogdon went 3 of 8, and Connaughton went 2 of 2, and Hill went 3 of 4. But our starters, Mirotić, 1 of 7. Middleton, 1 of 6. Bledsoe, 1 of 6.
There were some terrible decisions made, like at the end of the fourth quarter, first overtime, and obviously second overtime. Shot selection was just there was one shot. I think Brogdon put up one and Middleton put up one right towards the end of both of those periods where it was just like, why, man? Like just rushed, run down the court and just huck it. And it was like, you know, I want to say at the end of regulation, they ended up tying it because Raptors went back down the court and missed their shot, and they came back and tied it just before overtime or just before regulation ended. But Middleton came down and just hucked up a three when he was double covered, off balance, like just not a good percentage shot. Like, yes, we know Damian Lillard can drain those from 50 feet away off his back foot with Kevin Durant on him. I get it, but it's not a high quality shot. And he missed it badly, and Brogdon damn near airballed one, you know, and it was just really bad, really bad offense by the Bucks, and it's not the team they need to be, you know, and it's happened twice now in this series, game one and game three, and of course game one against Boston. And although one thing that I did see, and Drake made the mistake. He made the Spike Lee mistake last night when Giannis fouled out. He was clapping at him as he left the court.
Yeah, that
and
was
if
wonderful.
If I was a Raptors player, I would have tackled Drake. Because if you watched Giannis the rest of the game sitting on the bench, he was hot, like just hot. He had a good half hour to just stop and think about things. And I'm guaranteeing that that's going to be the fail for Toronto right there, is that Drake pretty much peed him off. And then after tomorrow night, there won't be another game in Toronto because Giannis is going to go off for over 40 tomorrow night. The Pacers player, Reggie Miller, choke move going down the court right at Drake just before time expires. And then win game five. Milwaukee. So anyways,
that's exactly what I thought.
It's just frustrating watching this team when they're bad, because they're not bad.
No, they're not. And it doesn't happen twice in a row. And I agree exactly with you. I saw the videos and stuff of that. I didn't see the end of that game, but it was like, because it was getting late and I've got an infant here. But I saw that video of that and I was just like, that was the dumbest thing to do. You get a man who, I mean, he's the best player on the planet. Why are you trying to make him angry? Like you can't afford that. If he plays just slightly better, you know, if he plays a 20-point game, you lost by 10.
And Drake, you're no, what was the line that Biden got back in the 80s? You, sir, are no John F. Kennedy. Drake, you, sir, are no Spike Lee. Sorry. Yeah, right. Spike Lee is a once in a generation transformative director that made some unbelievable movies and has changed how things are done and how people think about things. You are a crappy rapper from Canada. Sorry.
Oh, God's plan, man. It's that's what it is. The Bucks winning. I think it's God's plan. And if you don't get that, then you don't have a teenager living in your house, maybe, I guess.
Oh, God. I can't really imagine. My kids are 5 and 4. Can you only imagine the crap they're going to be listening to when they're teenagers? You're going to have kids in the world working. Josh is going to have a full-time job when they're – think about it, because what, Josh is 12?
He's 13 now, yeah.
13. So 10 years from now, he'll be 23. Ruby will be 15. He'll be gone. He'll be earning a paycheck and then hopefully not living in your basement. But Ruby's going to be listening to something. We're going to be the same age.
You'll still have kids in the back of the podcast. Never mind. Yeah. He'll be in the back of the podcast. I'll be like, shush. Nobody cares.
Josh, you want to be on the podcast tonight? Dad, your podcast sucks.
He's mean. He says hurtful things. I still think the Bucks win this in 5. I just do. I think that they're going to win this next game because I think they're going to be mad. I think they're going to come out, and I think they all said the right things. One thing that was fun is Mike Wilbon on the Tony Kornheiser podcast today was talking about, I think, like the...
God, I love that. Those two together are awesome, by the way.
They are, and Tony Kornheiser's podcast is amazing, and I love listening to that every day because he's just the funniest old man. he's like my law partner, except for actually old instead of just weirdly acting like an old man. And I know he's listening, and you know he's listening too. But yeah, to get back on point here, what Mike Wilbon was saying, what Mike Wilbon said was that it's the greatest kind of locker room stuff to get into because you go into Toronto's locker room and Milwaukee's locker room, and they're answering the questions for you. You ask them a question, they will answer you. He says there's none of this next question stuff. So he's very happy because they're both. He's like, well, they're in small markets and they don't get real push from there. I was like, well, it's just a different type of market. You know, Toronto's kind of a big city.
it's one of the what do they call that international city?
Yeah, I mean, it's
up there with London, New York City, Buenos Aires, Mexico City, Tokyo. Well,
and given it's not part of this country, that makes it international too, I think.
Right.
This is like an interstate highway.
Well, and everyone. Hey, sorry. Okay, you continue with your point, and then you come back to me. I just thought of something that I thought.
No, I think the big point I was just making is they said it's a really nice kind of atmosphere, and it's wonderful to be able to interview people like that because it's a fun atmosphere to be able to do those sorts of things. And I was like, well, that's really cool. It's really really nice to see that out of these players. And I think the thing is like, I don't think this group is going to stay down. I just think they're going to come out and they're just going to work. They all said the right things after this game. In their interviews, they were like, yeah, we can't play like that again. We can't do that again. It's just not okay. So, yeah, that was I think that there's just no chance that they play that game again. So I think the Bucks win the next one. And I think when they're in Milwaukee, there's going to be no chance they lose that one. I think they're going to win that one by 20.
Well, heading back out to the Western Conference, Portland's all like that too, because Portland's not a big market either. They're same size as Milwaukee, as far as I know. I don't have the stats in front of me because I don't like facts, so I'm just guessing here. And I like the show Portlandia, but so I mean they're like that too, though. You know, they're young and nobody knows who they are, and they answer the questions too. Now they're about to get swept by Golden State. Maybe they'll pull one out here at home in Game 4, but I doubt it, even though that series could be 2-1 in favor of Portland too if they wouldn't have blown 2 leads. But Golden State used to be like that back when it was Splash Brothers and Draymond Green. I mean, all 4 teams that are here right now all have a lot in common. The Bucks bench is much deeper. Their lack of high-end superstars, they've got one and then some nice pieces around them. It could be almost argued that about Toronto, too. It's kind of built the same way without the deep bench. And then Portland's just got 2 really good point guards and some good down-low players. And then, of course, Golden State's Golden State. And until further notice, someone's got to knock them off. What I was thinking about the other night was, so everyone's been talking about like, oh my God, the NBA is going to hate it. You know, the NBA hates this Milwaukee, Toronto stuff and Portland, Golden State. If it wasn't for Golden State, nobody'd be watching the NBA right now because there's no LA, there's no New York, there's no Boston, blah, blah, blah. And I started thinking about it, and they were talking about, because I was listening to Ted Davis talk to the TV guy for the Bucks, LePage?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, when it's the regional games, I can't think of his name off the top of my head right now. So I think it's LePage. But they both talked about, so right now, the guys who would do the games on Fox Sports, regionally here, they're off for the rest of the season, because after round one, all games are called by TNT, right? Or okay. ESPN, when ESPN has games. And so, except for Toronto's games. Toronto has to, because they're from Canada, and the CBC laws, the Canadian announcers are down courtside as well. And okay. So, because the Canadians listen to a completely different broadcast, and I started thinking about this, and how much do you think the league actually hates having Toronto versus Milwaukee, and having, or just Toronto Milwaukee in general, because of the international influence? So,
well, the other thing is that Toronto's numbers don't count towards the ratings.
But I'm just saying,
yeah.
The NBA is the most exportable sport in all of them. Out of all of them, baseball is pretty big in certain areas around the world. Football is big in the United States, a little bit in Canada, and then kind of in Mexico a little bit, and then a little bit in England and Germany, and that's about it. The NFL is trying so hard to get the international market. The NBA is everywhere. They're in Africa, they're in Europe, they're in China, they're in most of Asia, they're in Australia, they're in South America, they're everywhere. Do you think there's any chance the league hates the fact that the one international team that they have, Toronto, is playing, and so the entire country of Canada is watching the Eastern Conference Finals? And then on the other team, you've got a kid from Greece who might be the best player in basketball and is required to serve in the Greek military, and is the biggest success story ever to come out of Greece in the last 50 years. I won't go that far. I don't want to say anything too preposterous. Then you got Ilya Silva, who's from Turkey. You've got Mirotic, who's from Croatia, right?
Yeah, I think so. We looked it up in an earlier episode. Please go back and download that episode and listen to it.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I mean, think of all these international countries that are watching. The NBA's got to be loving this.
The NBA hates the fact that the ratings are down 48% from last year this time.
But they got to be loving the fact that this is being watched internationally.
I don't know that it is. I mean, you're saying that, but I don't know that it is. Are they watching it more this year than last year? The thing is that the global markets want the stars. And right. While Giannis is a growing star, there's been a playoffs now without LeBron. They said there's been an 18% dip of the playoffs overall. And a bunch of that might just be LeBron.
And, but then again, all these countries that are just used to just seeing LeBron now too are getting to see these other stars who are stars and watching this 7-foot-tall literal freak doing what he's doing. And everyone's going, he's only 24. Oh, he's a merchant's son from Greece? Are you kidding me?
I don't know that's happening. I mean, like, it sounds interesting, but I don't know that it is. All I know is that, I mean, in the U.S., they're down 48% from last year this time.
Well, of course they are, because as soon as you lose Boston and New York, you're in L.A., you're losing all of it.
Yeah, it hurts.
Yeah, it's been said before, you know, if you want every series to be Boston, L.A., like last year's World Series, then just have two teams, and that's it. And then let everybody play in a different league.
That's what the NBA has been doing for 50, 60 years.
Right, exactly.
Boston, L.A., yeah.
Well, minus Cleveland, and then when he was in Miami. And it's all, and nowadays it's based around the superstars, though.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if that was totally the case, then why has Chicago been irrelevant in anything except for hockey since the 90s for basketball and the 80s for football?
Oh, they went to one Super Bowl, I guess, since then. Probably because God. I think it's God stepping in and telling them that he doesn't want them to win. I'm convinced that they only let Rex Grossman get to a Super Bowl so God could strike him down from a higher point. So he like lifted him up only to have him lowered. So
they always talk about worst Super Bowl quarterbacks, like winning side or losing side, and I always forget about Rex Grossman.
Yeah, you shouldn't do that. You should remember Rex Grossman. He was a Super Bowl quarterback, because, you know, getting to Super Bowls and winning them is the only metric that matters. So he and Dan Marino are on the same level. Because that's a stupid argument and doesn't hold up to any scrutiny. And anybody whose only argument is championships is a moron. Anyhow,
I'm still on Team Mark Rippon. I don't think that guy gets enough credit.
He doesn't, and his son is going to be really fun to watch out of Boise State. Yeah. No, not son. Sorry, he's his nephew or whatever. I think. Anyhow,
you're correct because we talked about that about five episodes ago. Because then I brought up the fact that his daughter is a quarterback in the Lingerie Football League.
That's right. Was, you did. You did two. Bring that up.
Yes, I did.
We'll move on to baseball.
I thought we were going to go into Lingerie Football League.
No, I don't have any depth of knowledge on that. I'll be entirely honest.
Luckily for
I know
you,
nothing.
I do.
Yeah. I have watched zero of those games, just zero. I don't know anything about it. Since we last...
Oh, hey, by the way, before we move on to baseball, I got a quick catch up. So Toronto has not been in the playoffs since 2003-04, which is 14 seasons, second only to the Florida Panthers, who were some other team before Florida Panthers, right?
No, they weren't. No, they were the Panthers. They were an expansion team.
Oh, that's right. They were an expansion team. Okay, so Florida's been out of the playoffs for 22 seasons. Toronto's been out for 14 seasons. However, I would argue that I do believe that Toronto does have the nicest-looking uniforms in the league.
Okay. All right, I'll give you that. Perfect. I don't know.
I really used to like the Nordiques. The Nordiques is one of the best retro ones. But the Whalers are
the
Whale too. I really wish that they'd contract or they'd take Arizona and throw it back up north and turn it back into the Whalers. So
No. Yeah. The Carolina used to be the Whalers.
That's right. So they.
I'm trying to think. Phoenix or the Coyotes. I think they used to be. Are they the ones that used to be the Nordiques or they used to be the Winnipeg? Because Winnipeg Jets left, became something else, and then they came back as a new team.
They were the Arizona Thrashers or the Atlanta Thrashers.
The Atlanta Thrashers was an expansion team. And then Danny Heatley from the Badgers on there for a little while.
Oh, no. Here you go. So
this is good.
The Jets became the Coyotes.
Coyotes, okay.
Then the Thrashers.
Thrashers were expansion left, and became.
Were expansion and went back to Winnipeg and became the Jets.
And the Nordiques became the Avalanche.
True story.
Yeah. Okay. So we've lined all that up, which is super important. And I know everybody loved that. Is the
and that was done with a lot of just memory. So if anyone wants to get online at JBarn54 or at Cheddar Talk and correct us, that would be fantastic because I just need the followers. all Russian bots right now.
Great.
All
bots. Anyhow, we were saying before Aaron decided to take us through the history of the 1990s and early 2000s NHL.
Back to Blurn's ball.
Yeah, back to baseball. The one thing I will say is I did love John Van Beesbrook as the goalie for that Florida Panthers team when they went to the Stanley Cup final. But the Brewers this week played the Philadelphia Phillies in Philadelphia, took 3 out of 4. Monday, when we recorded, they lost that game 4-7, but they came right back, won to 6-1, 5-2, and 11-3. Big run games. We got to see Ryan Braun, zombie Ryan Braun, still out there kicking around and doing very well this last week. Not in every single game, but he played pretty well this week.
He struck out at a very key moment the other night versus Braves. But anyhow, that was a wicked pitch, though. Like, everyone gave him so much. Anyway, sorry, you started off with Philly. Let's start with Philly.
Yeah, so that one, it's good to see the bats come alive. The pitching has been very good recently. I mean, over the last week, say back to the 10th. Okay, well, even going back further. So we had that the great run. We beat the Mets. Only gave up one, gave up three to the Mets, gave up two to the Mets, gave up three to Washington, gave up zero to Washington, gave up three to Washington. That's six straight games.
Gave up 12 to the Braves.
Yeah, won all six of those, though, and those were all at home. Then they gave up zero to the Cubs, gave up two to the Cubs, then gave up four to the Cubs. And then a seven-run game to Philadelphia is the aberration there. But then it was one run, two runs, three runs. And then, 12 to 8.
12 runs. Was that Burns who got lit up in that game?
It was, Burns and then everybody else in the whole team. It was that one was. That's the first game of the Atlanta series. They started Friday, Saturday, Sunday, played three in Atlanta at, I forget what it is now, SunTrust Stadium, I think. It's not Turner Field anymore.
Monpa's pretty good CNN paid for stadium outside of Atlanta. Yeah,
it's something else now, though. It's like SunTrust Stadium or something, I think, right now. I'm sure I could find that. Yeah, the 12-8 win or loss, pardon me, that's deceptive in that they scored all of their runs in the ninth. It was a ridiculous game. They scored not in the ninth. So they got one run in the seventh, three in the eighth, four in the ninth.
The Brewers were down 12-0 at one point, and then they scored eight runs between the seventh and ninth. So yeah.
Well, yeah, they had a 9-run inning in the sixth that they did that blew it up.
Yeah, that
was Chacín starting that game. Pardon me. So Chacín just did not have a game there, and he's been pretty good this year. But he had 5 innings pitched, gave up 8 hits, 3 earned runs. He gets the loss because they were down 3-0. Burns comes in, pitches 2/3 of an inning, gives up 5 hits.
Just goes NASA on the bit and just gets rocked.
7 earned runs, 2 walks. Like, that whip is just ridiculous. He pitches 2/3, gives up 5 hits, 2 walks. Just crazy. And then Barnes. Barnes gets 1 1/3. He gives up 2 more. And of course, our favorite pitcher, Hernán Pérez, comes in to get the one inning. Just to finish it up, has 2 walks, gives up no runs, no hits. He has, over the last about 3 years, the best ERA on the Brewers. And he pitched something like 5 innings last year, I think. 3 or 5.
Yulies didn't even have that bad of a game, really. I mean, to be perfectly honest, it's not great. I mean, 3 runs over 5 innings, you know, take it or leave it. But, you know, that's nothing. But Burns, man.
They should have never
made him a starter at the beginning of the year. I think that's the biggest problem. I think it really knocked his confidence down. If they would have just used him in a bullpen role like he was at the end of last year, I think it would have been good from the get-go. But, I don't know.
It was worth trying. It's nice to be able to see if you could get a bunch of young starters all going at once like that. It would have been good. I don't know. I guess I'm still out on that. I trust at this point that the council knows what he's doing with pitchers, and I don't feel terrible about it. I think I like him going in that role. He just didn't have it this year to start off with. We'll see where he goes. He's got some time.
Well, his entire success was built off the end of last year going into the playoffs. I mean, Burns was awesome in the late part of the season and the playoffs. There's no doubt about it. Like, the Brewers wouldn't have gotten to where they were without him. You know, he was a very key – he wasn't, like, the biggest cog in the machine, but he was one of the key cogs of why they got there. It's just, you know, I guess you got to take that – got to roll that die eventually, but – on the opposite side of the field, though, Josh Tomlin for the Braves didn't have much better of an outing because he gave up 4 between Tomlin and Venters. They gave up 8 runs and 2 2/3 innings to the Brewers. That's the only reason why that score looks even close. The Brewers put up 8 runs in the last 3 innings in some effort to try and win the game. I thought for a second there they were going to, but.
Yeah. Brewers come out the next day, though, and just have a kind of gut-wrenching loss. They got up 2-0 right away to start the game and kind of held on to that. They were down 3-2, scored a ninth-inning run to tie it up, sent it to the extra innings. And that's when, I mean, it's like those things you just don't expect to see happening. You don't expect to have Giannis play just a terrible 12-point game. You don't expect Hader to give up a solo shot in the 10th inning to cost you the game, but it happens. Mm-hmm. And it happened this time, and it was Freddie Freeman. And, of course, then as soon as Freeman hits the home run, out come all the Twitter trolls with their, I told you he's overrated, he's nothing, this and that. I was like, he gave up a home run. Come on, man. Like,
he gives up home runs to good hitters a lot. And he is a straight ball lefty. And so last year there was a lot of unknown, like he was an unknown pitcher. Nobody knew his stuff. Well, then he made it to the playoffs and he was a gem in the playoffs. Everybody knows what he throws now. Like, hitters are smart. They're not dumb. They're not just walking up there, I'm going to take a bat and I'm going to hit a ball. No, they study these pitchers now. They've got lots of downtime in the hotel rooms on road trips. That's all they do is study these pitchers. So they take a guess. He's a 3-pitch pitcher. They take a guess as to what's coming, and if it's a fastball high and in, and you get around on it in time, guess what? You're going to launch that ball 450 feet because just kinetic activity alone, and that's what's happening.
Yeah, but it's not happening a lot.
Good hitters hit good pitches.
Yeah, so the thing is, it doesn't happen a ton. Like, he gave it the home run, but he strikes out, like, 2 an inning on average, it seems like. I think he's around that.
Right. No, he's still a good pitcher. I'm just saying that there's more information on him now. That's why it's, yeah. And he's getting a lot more action than he got last year because Knebel's not around. You know, and Jeffress is just getting back into it now and looked pretty good the other night, by the way.
Yeah,
and But I mean, that's the thing is it's been pretty much the hater show in the back end of the bullpen since the beginning of the season because he's kind of been out there doing it by himself. And yeah, nobody was paying attention to Josh Hader this time last year. Most of us didn't even know who the heck Josh Hader was until about August.
No,
I'm just saying, I'm literally saying as someone who was in the process of moving my family last year and was kind of out of the loop for a while, like I knew who Josh Hader was. But for the casual Brewers fan, and I didn't catch a game in all of July because I was off playing Army somewhere and we weren't allowed to. So I had no idea what was going on with the Brewers. But for the casual Brewer fan, like nobody really knew how dominant this guy was. We knew he was a hard throwing lefty out of the bullpen, but nobody knew like how ridiculous it was. You know, like did he make the All-Star game last year?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he was dominant the first half of that
season. You
got to
remember the All-Star game happened while I was in Michigan, too. So,
he had a very good end. I mean, he came up the year before. He had a couple really good outings. I mean, you were like, oh, good, I feel good about this guy. But, yeah, he was just a revelation last year. He played so great. And, yeah, he's not going to play perfect rounds. I think some of it, too, is the fantasy. And people are mad because too many people drafted him far too high than what you should have been drafting any reliever. And
you don't.
Yeah. It's the fantasies thing gets into people's heads and they start judging them based on how they did or hurt their fantasy team rather than what they are as players. And he's still a great player, but you'd overdraft.
What's his name? The guy that's the closer for the Yankees forever. Help me, John.
Mariano Rivera.
Rivera ruined how people draft relievers in fantasy baseball forever because back in the heyday, you could take Mariano Rivera that high because you were going to get points with him.
The number of games for the Yankees
were winning
were up
hundreds
by three.
Of games every year, and he was getting 40 saves a year. You know,
he could. That's the thing that makes it where it's like you can't compare him to Trevor Davis. Trevor Davis was pitching with the Padres, and Mariano Rivera, the number of save opportunities he had is ridiculous compared to what Trevor Hoffman was getting playing with those terrible Padres teams.
Yeah. You put Trevor Hoffman, just the Tony Gwynn argument. You put Tony Hoffman or Tony Gwynn in New York, and they'd be up there with Babe Ruth and who's a really with Mariano, I'm losing my train of thought. Tony Gwynn would be up there with Joe DiMaggio, and Hoffman would be right up there with Mariano Rivera. But because they played in San Diego, where nobody cares, nobody knows about them. Yeah. So
the game on Sunday was incredibly fun if you like home runs and nothing else, because every single run in that game was a solo home run. And it does also lead to one of the things I've noticed with this Brewers team that does infuriate me is, they're up and down and all that. And you know, I get that. And there's games I'd rather they hadn't lost or they lose badly. Somebody gets lit up for an inning for 9 runs or something. But their base running is insanely stupid. Like, they're terrible. It's like the number of times, like, Aguilar is just going to stumble his way around third and go home. I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing? What was the one where we only got lucky this last week playing against the Nationals? I think bases were loaded, right? Bases were loaded. There's a hit right to the third baseman. He's going to go step on the bag to turn the double play. But when he does, Gio Gonzalez hasn't left the bag yet because he doesn't realize that he's got a force going home. Mm-hmm. But in doing so, he confused the third baseman so much that he didn't step on the bag.
I didn't catch that one.
Oh, it was amazing. He instead doesn't step on the bag, gets confused, looks back the runner, and then throws home and gets the force at home, and no one else is out. So with bases loaded, ground ball to the third baseman, one out happens, and then the Brewers scored some runs after that. But it was only because Gio Gonzalez was so bad at understanding how to run the bases that it actually turned genius. The other day,
he is a pitcher, so you have to give him a little leniency.
If it were just him, that's one thing. It was amazingly bad, but still, Aguilar had some massive running errors this last week. They had a hit and run where they had Arcia going to second, and he's sliding foot first on what turned out to be just him stealing a base because nobody hit the ball. they took a bad swing at it and couldn't get to it, and because it was not a good pitch to swing at, but they had to try to cover it. And, yeah, just he got caught out, and you're like, well, if you go head first or something, you'll try to get yourself out there. But no, he ran it like he was like a fifth grader trying to steal second, sliding foot first and everything. But then the other one that was maddening was yesterday. Gamble is up. Yasmani Grandal is on third. I'm trying to remember. There was somebody on second. I think it was Aguilar. Anyhow, there's two outs, and Gamble is up in the bottom of the ninth. And during one of the plays, the ball gets past the catcher, but it's a fastball. Grandal takes three steps towards home and then stops. Now, he's the catcher. If anybody knows how the ball is going to play off that backstop, it better be your catcher. And he didn't understand how quickly that ball was going to bounce off that backstop and come right back at the catcher because he picked it up quickly and threw Grandal out at third. He got picked off on third with two outs. Just there wasn't a hit. He got picked off by the catcher. And it's just like, that was insane. How did you get that far? Like, I get there's some instinct to it, but you got to be smarter than that. And you got to, especially as the catcher, you've got to know how that ball plays off of there. You got to have a feeling for that sort of thing. And he should have just. And the thing is then, of course, Gamble got to start the 10th inning. And then Gamble hit a solo home run in the 10th inning. And then it was Hader came right back out and finished it off then, I believe. So, yeah, it was Hira got his very first home run. So congratulations to Keston Hira. It's great to be able to see that. Yeah, it's good. He's played very well out there. And I mean, he's not an all-star or anything like that, but he's stable and he's doing well and he's hitting all right. He's got a good look at some balls. A couple of them
are Moustakas is back at third and Shaw's on the DL where he belongs. Sorry.
Whatever. IL. And so, it's we'll see. Obviously, we'll see if he's going right back down once Shaw comes back. But Hiura's been putting good spin on the ball. He just can't some of them are just being hit at people sometimes, and that's just the way baseball is. But he's looked good out there, and you can't complain about it just yet. He's done all right out there, and his fielding's been fine, and he's hitting all right, and he got his first home run. So that was fun to see in a game that ended as a 3-2 extra inning game. And if the Brewers could be done with extra innings at this point, they have had...
It'd be nice.
In the last, 10 days, they've had an 18-inning game, a 15-inning game, and two 10-inning games, I think. It's ridiculous. Just finish it off early. Somebody's got to start hitting a baseball.
And they stopped selling beer in the bottom of the sixth inning, too. I mean, it's just rough for everybody there.
Yeah. How are you supposed to watch the Phillies that long without a beer?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, that was the thing I was going to bring up. Thanks for reminding me, by the way. So I was going to take you back to the Phillies game or the Phillies series. The thing I found most delicious about that. So as much as I love that Manny Machado's just pretty much average out in San Diego, now that we're never going to hear from him again because he's in San Diego.
Yeah, but he's got money.
Bryce Harper being terrible against the Brewers. How terrible was he? Because when you were talking about that ball coming off the backstop, in between Bryce Harper unable to hit against the Brewers, and then he booted a ball in the outfield that was just terrible.
That was fun.
Ugly. God, it was ugly. And he looks bad, and yet ESPN, of course, he hits one mammoth home run to center field, and it's the top of the Sports Center for 4 days straight. I'm just happy that that the Phillies have him for the next 13 years until he is 39 years old, because he's going to get progressively worse. He's never going to have another MVP season, and he is going to slowly just turn into a subpar 250 hitting Rob Deer. So good job, Phillies. Things that frustrate me about this Brewers team, I don't know if they have this stat, but is there anywhere I can look? I suppose baseballreference.com is on there somewhere. If I dig through their archives of spreadsheets and stuff like that, but I can't imagine that there's any team that's left as many bases loaded situations as the Brewers have this year.
Yeah, that's got to be out there somewhere.
Especially no out loaded bases situations. It's amazing to me. So that game the other night when the Brewers lost 3-2, Ryan Braun struck out with the bases loaded. After that was the third out after. Oh, what was the sequence of events before that? Jesus weakly grounded out to shortstop, and they held all the players in place. It was just bad. So it's frustrating to watch. Just so many runners left in place by the Brewers. It's hard to watch. And then lastly, you were talking about like And part of the reason why the Brewers are leaving so many people on base is because they're winning by home runs. You know, there's not a lot of what we got last year of run production. There's just a lot of home runs being hit. Congratulations to Christian Yelich for hitting number 19.
Yeah.
19?
Yep.
19 yesterday?
19 now, yeah.
And most people predicted that he would hit no more than 26 this year. It's not even June, and he's got 19.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. So this weekend, the Brewers play the Phillies Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then there's a quick two-game series against the Twins on Memorial Day and then Tuesday. Thinking I'm going to try and get to that one on Tuesday. Not going to lie.
Those are fun.
But, yeah, school, though, with the kids, that's the hard part.
I looked it up. Harper went 2 of 14 in the series over four games, 2 of 14.
Like with 10 strikeouts, too, or something like that, right?
He
leads the league in strikeouts, too. That's the other thing. It's complete feast or famine.
He's made a very specific plan, and he's not alone in this. Like, I think I've talked about this before. The plan is there's two things you could do with the amount of shifting that goes on in baseball now. The one is learn to hit opposite field and be an all-around hitter. Yes, Monty Grandal started doing some of that. He's tried taking balls away to the other side. He had a great liner down the third base line this last week where he basically just was trying to just push it down the line, it looked like, or it might have been kind of a mistake too. But with the shift, nobody could get over there. Nobody could get over there. They're forever away from it, so it goes all the way through the outfield out almost to the wall, and you're like, yeah, that was great. The other thing you can do is say, like, they're going to put in a shift. I'm going to hit it over. I'm going to put it out. The only way I'm going to beat this shift is hitting it over the shift, and that's what Harper does. Harper says, well, I'm going to – and he's a guy who could hit 300 every year if he really wanted to do that. But he's decided that he wants the home run numbers because that's how he got paid, and that's how he's going to keep doing these things. So he's trying to hit home runs, and he's willing to let his batting average sit. It's at 222 or something right now. He's batting at 220, and he's fine with being a 220 hitter if it means he's going to get 40 home runs. And that's what he's decided is part of the plan, and he's not alone in that. Coaches are coaching people to do that. So it's part of just the strategy at this point.
Well, one of the first people I remember that started doing that opposite field slap every once in a while was Prince Fielder, because Prince Fielder was one of the first people, well, not one of the first, the shift's been going on forever, just in recent memory, though, like ever since the shift's been super common. Prince used to have the super shift put on him where the third baseman would be standing closer to second base than third base, and the other three would all be between second and first. And late towards his run with the Brewers, I just remember every once in a while Prince would just like slap at a ball to left field.
Well,
and it would roll past the third base and all the way down the line. And because he wasn't that fast, it was only a single most of the time. But
that man had two inside the park home runs, and I watched
Yes,
him.
He did. I remind people that all the time whenever they talk about how slow Prince Fielder is, like two inside the park home runs, probably two times more than anybody else. But yeah, so I mean, it is. But I mean, it's bad optics, though, too, at the same time. I mean, sooner or later, like, striking out is going to become unpopular, right?
Maybe. And then the game will change again. It's just the era of baseball we're in at this point.
The Memorial Day Tuesday series against the Twins, that might just be home run city, because Milwaukee is at the Twins' new money pit, Target Field.
Which is beautiful.
Which is beautiful. Between the months of May and September.
Yes.
I keep reminding everybody that if they ever do get to a World Series, God, those November games are going to be terrible, aren't they? If they don't get snowed out. I predict sometime in our future life, if the Twins make a World Series, one of those World Series games is going to be played at Miller Park because conditions are going to be considered too impossible to play at Target Field.
Yeah, we'll see.
Anyways, so that should be a home run fest against the Twins, though, because they hit a lot of home runs, too.
Yeah, that team's good right now, too, and it's good to see both the Brewers and the Twins being good. But at this point, we're going to move on past. We don't have football and hockey so much to talk about for our Wisconsin sports, so we'll move on into the part we call the tale.
Now it's time for the tale, covering Wisconsin's other sporting news.
So, Aaron, this week in the tale, we only had a couple of things. The first thing we wanted to start off with was women's softball. It was an interesting set of games this weekend in the regionals for the NCAA. First off, so there's four teams in the little regional that they're in. It's a double elimination. So first thing that happened is they beat Notre Dame 4-2.
Yeah.
And then Oklahoma got to play UMBC, and UMBC did not get the massive upset this week playing the number one Oklahoma team.
I see what you did here.
Yeah, yeah. So they lost to Oklahoma. So the Badgers and Oklahoma both got to play each other, and Oklahoma beat them 4-0. Notre Dame beat UMBC to eliminate them. So then the Badgers and Notre Dame played. The Badgers were down 4-2 in the ninth, and Stephanie Lombardo hit a walk-off home run, three-run home run, to win 5-4. Very exciting game. Yes, so that puts them into the matchup, eliminates Notre Dame as Wisconsin beat them twice. Then Wisconsin gets a 2-1 win over Oklahoma. Now, this doesn't seem like a lot to everybody. Oklahoma, though, had been in a 41-game win streak at that point.
Yes.
They are world beaters. That team played great, and the Badgers beat them 2-1. And they played them, by the way, it's the Norman Regional. They were playing them in Norman. It's a home game.
Right.
And, snapped their streak, set up a winner-takes-all game where Oklahoma won 2-0. Oklahoma advances as the regional champion, but great season for UW women's softball. Fantastic year. Congratulations, ladies. Just a wonderful regional and a wonderful season. So congratulations there. Anything else you want to say, Aaron?
Are college baseball and softball the only ones that have super regionals?
I don't know. The hard part is that, of course, Wisconsin doesn't have a baseball team, so I don't follow any of them because they used to. They used to, and yeah, they basically, as I believe it is, that came down to the row team, the crew team, or baseball, and they choose crew, because I think the crew graduates tended to put more money back into the university than the baseball ones did.
Oh, no way, huh? You're kidding, right? Oh.
Speaking of crew, though, the crew championships will be coming up in about 2 weeks, the end of May. And UW currently is ranked number 11 in the country in the crew. If you don't know what I mean, it's the very long, thin boats that they row on. And if you go watch them on the lakes around Madison, it's fun. It's interesting. Several of those guys will probably end up on Olympic teams because there are usually one or two Badgers on the Olympic crew teams. So fun point. We'll probably talk about it in 2 weeks when they're all done and the Badgers don't win a national title. But still fun to mention. The only other couple little things I do want to bring up... we still don't have an NHL team in Wisconsin, which is a massive tragedy because, as is mentioned, Florida has two teams, and they don't watch them. Of course, they did have the President's Cup this year, which means that they lost in the first round of the playoffs for the Tampa Bay Lightning, which, who don't follow hockey, President's Cup is the best record in hockey regular season, and it's cool to have a trophy for the team that has the best record regular season because then you can make them feel really sad about the trophy they have when they don't win the other title. But if you're still looking for a team to root for, I grew up playing hockey. When I played hockey in the UP as a kid, my uncle was going to Harvard, and he used to send me Bruins stuff. So I became a Bruins fan growing up with that. Also, we hate the Blackhawks, and that was the next closest team. I don't mind the Stars because they're a Western Conference team, but then they moved to Dallas, and now we've got the Wild.
We all hate the Stars.
Yeah, because that's terrible. And then they won a Stanley Cup after they left with Mike Modano still on the team, which is hurtful.
God, hurtful. Don't stop. Stop.
So anyhow, I root for the Bruins, and I'm very excited.
You're really cutting into the only vein I have of Minnesota in me anymore. Leave me alone, John.
I'm trying to move on. I'm going to root for the Boston Bruins because I love the Boston Bruins. But Joe Pavelski, Plover native, Stevens Point area senior high graduate, and also... UW hockey national champion. He's still playing as the captain for the San Jose Sharks. So if you want to go see a Badger playing hockey, go watch the San Jose Sharks. They might only have the one game left, unfortunately. They lost at home. They're down 3-2. They're going back to St. Louis. St. Louis, the only one of the teams when the league expanded to 12 teams, the only team from that first 12 who has never won a Stanley Cup.
That's
Joe Pavelski has had a heck of a rough playoffs. He scored a goal by catching a puck in the face, and it took out a tooth. He also suffered a massive concussion and missed basically an entire series. Like went out in one game seven, came back for the next game seven. But good luck to Joe Pavelski. We love seeing our Badgers out there doing well. Also, the NCAA track and field championships are going on. Morgan McDonald looking to set up a very rare championship run for distance runners. He is the national cross country champion. He won the 10K indoors. He's looking to win it outdoors as well, and become just one of the truly great distance runners of all time. So, something to keep your eye out for. Follow Badger Cross Country and Track on Twitter.
Being a former track and cross country coach, the indoor 10K is the most boring race on earth to watch. By the way.
Because it's such a short track, you just watch them jump back and forth.
200 meters at a time.
Anything else you wanted to add, Aaron, before we move on?
Oh, I was just going to say, how did Jonathan Taylor do okay with the track season? I haven't been keeping up with that, sorry.
He didn't place particularly high in anything. He didn't make any particular scores for him that I was able to see. I don't think he was there early in the season. He showed up later and made the team, and he's very excited about it, so... If anything, if he gets any faster, that would be amazing for this team. And the fact that he's going to spend – it gives him a chance to spend time with speed coaches that doesn't count as time at the football team.
Exactly.
And, yeah, so it's
brilliant.
Great.
It's brilliant, actually. So, yeah.
Yeah, so if anything, it's just fun. I didn't see that he did not win a Big Ten championship in any way, so it's still just a fun thing to see. And the other thing, too, that I'll bring up in terms of hockey is Team USA – in the was it the International Ice Hockey Federation, they are still kicking and going pretty strong at this point. They just beat Germany. A lot of Badgers, a lot of people from Wisconsin who played at other universities as well out there on these teams. They beat Germany 3-1. They're the number three team right now, but in their own group, but they are now guaranteed at least a spot in the quarterfinals. Their last game is a preliminary game against Canada, which will be Tuesday the 21st at 8 p.m. or I guess 2:15 p.m. here. They're playing in Slovakia. Team USA's only loss is to Slovakia, 4-1, and then they had an overtime win against Finland. But Finland, that was their overtime loss is the only loss they had, so they're on top of the bracket right now. But we did get to beat France in hockey, which is something I never thought was a thing that happened. Beat them 7-1.
Anytime we beat France, I'll just end the sentence there. France. There we go.
So anyhow, that's all we have for that.
After we bailed you out of WW2.
Jeez. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We'll move things along now to our last call.
Time to look around and get your bearings. It's time for the last call.
All right, so the only couple things that I wanted to go through. First one I did want to go is my small little rant on there were some people who put out stuff about the NBA draft or drafts in general are un-American, and I thought it was hilarious. And they're legitimately concerned this is un-American. Players should be able to come out of college and go work for whoever they want, to which they were reminded that, yes, they do get to work whoever they want, the NBA. They're working for the NBA, who is their employer. Their employer says, great, we're sending you to this department. You know, it's like right. You get a job. They're like, awesome, cool. The other thing that would be great is it assumes that you get to pick your job and where you work and the rate and just all those things. It's like, cool. Do you think a lot of people get to pick the place where they work and get to work the job they wanted exactly in the city they wanted to live in? How many people had to go and live and work in cities they didn't want to be in? Or how many people are trapped in a city they want to be in? How many people are trapped in a job they don't want to be in?
I wouldn't say that I don't want to be in Janesville, but I didn't choose it. It was where I got to go.
Yeah, yes, I mean, I've been lucky to work my way.
It's like you're talking to me right there, John. Thank you.
Well, I have wanted to be back in Central Wisconsin because I feel very comfortable with the people of Central Wisconsin, and I love living here. It's just good people, and I grew up here, so there's a great comfort factor. And I've definitely wanted to try to get back here. Not everybody has that ability. Not everybody has the chance to just pick up and go and live and work where they wanted to work. The idea that the NBA players have some sort of specific other thing that gives them this right, and to call it un-American, I was like, what exactly part of the Constitution where we guaranteed any of that? What part of being an American is being guaranteed that you get to play for the NBA, but also only the part in the NBA where you wanted to go? It's like, no, you move up and get the chance to do that by staying in the league and doing things. It's like working in the mailroom. You get to go on to that next job when you show you can do the first thing right. So, I don't know. I don't find it all that terrible. I haven't seen any player complaining about being put up there. So anything else you wanted to add, Aaron, before I get to my last point?
First of all, I want to apologize to Janesville, Milton area. I do enjoy being down here. I'm just saying that it was out of all the places that this where my promotion opportunity came from within the state of Wisconsin with my job with the Wisconsin Army National Guard. And so we're getting used to it down here. It's very different. I've lived north of Highway 29 my entire life in Wisconsin and or northern Minnesota. So it's been a little bit different down here. Believe me, I enjoy being only an hour away from Miller Park, being 40 minutes away from Camp Randall. It's great. I absolutely love it down here. So let's just get that out of the way. That wasn't a shot at Janesville. It's just, yeah, you just don't know where you're going to end up in life. Reports are that Zion Williamson's is he going to go back to Duke? Like, he was already like, I'm on my way to New Orleans to check out new houses down there. The only reason why I was un-American was because LA and New York didn't get it. You know, that's it, which is actually more un-American than anything. Like, well, it has to go to LA or New York because it's good for America. Shut up. You know, it's the only thing that makes it un-American is that you don't get to see the lottery actually happen, and that you're just trusting that the league is being honest, which after this year's draft, I guess, they have to be honest, because why else would you, except for the drama factor, why else would you give New Orleans the first overall pick?
Sure.
That's going to be a very interesting situation, especially with Anthony Davis and whatnot. So, hey, John, so there's 25, this is my wrap up here, 25 players available. There were 25 top NFL free agents available. Only a couple left. You tell me if the Packers should sign them, yes or no. Go. Donkey Kong Sue.
No. No.
Trey Boston.
Boston would be interesting.
Eric Berry.
I don't know where he is right now in terms of his... I'm not sure. He'd be worth kicking the tires on for sure.
He was the one that... He was a cancer survivor, right?
Yeah. The thing is okay. you know you want to be starting. You probably want to start Savage this year. So I guess I don't know. It would depend on how much you're spending on it. And, I mean, you're already starting some of these camps, so... I don't know. I'd be very interested in him. Right. He's still talented.
Okay. Jay Ajayi.